Welcome to the Three Trackers Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Amy Lefkowitz, and my favorite Matt Wieters fact is that he's God's personal catcher. Joining me, as always, from somewhere in Michigan. I don't remember anyone.
Plymouth.
He's so good that he got Jim Palmer to stop talking about himself. It's Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm a little confused why Jared is showing his shirt to us right now.
We'll get there in a second.
But I have a question. How do you remember if it's IE or EI?
It's I before E, except as in Wieters, but it is as in Wieters too. joining us from our nation's capital, he took batting practice this morning. There were no survivors. It's Jared Weiss.
I don't know what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah, we're recording this on a Tuesday, but not just any ordinary Tuesday. Well, it is an ordinary Tuesday, except for the fact that Matt Wieters' bastion of something. Something like quintessentially Oriole-y has decided to sign with the crosstown, the Beltway rival, Washington Nationals, as of a few hours ago. And we are reeling from these. This was it mild mild betrayal?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that was mostly caused by Dan Duquette in the first place. Jared, let me give you a few minutes to work out your feelings here. What is your relationship with Matt Wieters? What does he symbolize to you? Please be as sad as possible.
It's a close personal relationship. For me, Matt Wieters was the first sign that the Orioles were getting out of their 15-year slump. And they didn't do so immediately, but and we were going back, and I was going back and looking at our old conversations that we were having from like a decade ago.
And also, he had nothing to do with it.
But yeah, no, it was so this was the 2007 draft, and the Orioles had been terrible for a decade at that point. And I was going through my conversations. I have a friend who's a big Pirates fan, and the Pirates drafted just before the Orioles that year. And I remember that, probably from whatever Ian was telling me about Matt Wieters, but Baseball America and all the other stuff, like Matt Wieters was the guy that I wanted the Orioles to get just passionately. More than anything, I wanted the Orioles to get him. But I had known about the Orioles' complete inability to draft anyone. Not even worthwhile, just inability to draft people, I think. Mm-hmm. I watched the draft on TiVo, and I distinctly remember watching the draft, and I looked back, Ben and I were g-chatting at the moment, but I distinctly remember watching the draft, hearing Matt Wieters' name called, and I mean, as ridiculous as it sounds, I almost was brought to tears. Like, literally, I was on the verge of crying, because it was just like, which is sad.
I've seen you have broken bones in your body and not cry. It's very impressive.
But it was so, I was so happy, and it was like such the move that I felt the Orioles not just me, everyone thought the Orioles was the right move to make, and it had been so long since the Orioles had made a move like that.
Right. So the year before, they had taken Billy Rowell. Whose single claim to fame, other than being like spectacularly terrible, is that he was so bad that he caused teams to later pass in Mike Trout. Which is pretty remarkable if you think about it.
Well, so two picks before Billy Rowell was Clayton Kershaw. Immediately after Rowell was Lincecum and Max Scherzer. So, I mean, I think Orioles did okay there.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But yeah, so Wieters was amazing. I saw him in the minor leagues. I remember driving out for his first game in Baltimore. I remember going with my brother, who made me late, so we missed the opening of the game, and I still haven't quite forgiven him for that. I remember that improbably his first hit in the majors was a triple. obviously the baseball prospectus projections. Matt Wieters. It was just the idea that the Orioles could be good and meaningful again. He mm-hmm. brought me hope, I guess, maybe, is a simple way of putting it. So, dang. I'll forever be grateful for that.
That's beautiful. So now that this hope is extinguished...
yeah.
Does it hurt worse that it's the Nationals? A team that is, I believe, 3 blocks from your residence.
Yeah, well, that's a mixed feeling. I'm actually closer to Matt Wieters now, so... Mixed blessing there. There's no real rivalry between the Orioles and Nationals as much as it would be nice if there were one. So, like, my friends who are Nats fans and I, we joke about the teams, but it's not like there's really any animosity. So, I don't know.
Until now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but now you get to see, and also the part where he's a 31-year-old busted catcher who can't hit and can't really catch either.
Which is maybe a metaphor for the Orioles, too. I don't know.
Doesn't seem great, but no, it's okay, because now your main catcher last year nearly had an RBI. So.
Yeah, I don't, Ben, did we go over that with Caleb Joseph? I don't know if you know this about him. He didn't have an RBI last year.
What?
Right.
And he was the starting catcher, I believe, right? He caught more innings than anyone else.
I think that's true. Let me... Yeah. He had 130 at-bats. He had 140 plate appearances. So it's not like... false, but, I mean, that's a lot of plate appearances to not have an RBI.
It doesn't seem great.
No.
He hit 174.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you add his batting average to his OPS, he's almost up to 800. So that's good.
Yeah, and he was the starting catcher on the depth chart for most of the winter, until they signed Wellington Castillo, another declining 30-year-old who can't really catch. But the more things change. Yeah, so I feel bad for you, although I will probably feel worse at the end of, let's say, 2018, to pick a year at random.
That's fair. I think Wieters maybe have been, like, my last favorite player. Now I know that I have a favorite. He was the last guy who was like, this is my favorite player in the majors on the Orioles. And I think maybe, I don't know if I grew out of that or if the Orioles stopped getting anybody I could root for or what, but...
Pretty sure Mark Trumbo's on your team.
So, well, other than Mark Trumbo, obviously. Yeah.
The now, good thing about Mark Trumbo is that you loved him before he was an Oriole.
Yeah. Where I think that was the first piece of feedback we got on our first fake podcast before we started releasing professionally is, like, stop making jokes about Mark Trumbo. And clearly, we listened to feedback pretty well.
Thank you for the feedback.
All right. That is quite the extended intro, but I thought this deserved its referee.
No, and, yes. Thanks.
You know, this is a momentous day for basically nobody. And this does come before the Thursday deadline, right? So Matt Wieters is a crossover now.
Yeah.
So great news, National League owners. God, that 13-1 pick is really just... It's been burning a hole in your pocket.
Pull the trigger. Do it. To answer your question, Ben, I'm wearing my Matt Wieters Facts t-shirt, which is why I was holding it up to the video. I don't know if you could see it or not.
I can read that it says, even I couldn't have gotten this guy out.
Yeah, it's a picture of Jim Palmer, and he's talking about Matt Wieters.
Okay.
If you listen to Orioles broadcast, you know that Jim Palmer pretty much... exclusively talks about how awesome he is, him being Jim Palmer. So the fact that he couldn't get Matt Wieters out would be a Chuck Norris-worthy fact. Also, now I'm thinking about it, my rock band name for my band was There Were No Survivors, which was after the Matt Wieters fact.
Which is my favorite Matt Wieters fact, and maybe my favorite of all time. Although I do remember that the Matt Wieters facts, I am old enough to remember that they were actually subsequent to the Cole Hamels facts, which kind of took a little bit of the shine off.
And of course, you, maybe.
My favorite Cole Hamels fact, that Cole Hamels eats whole camels.
That's pretty good.
That's a good one. Thank you to those creatives. And thank you to you, the listener, for putting up with our first 10 minutes of conversation, as well as for sending in questions. We enjoy getting your questions. Please send them to us, scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. I know we'll have some drafts starting, and keeper deadlines very soon, right? Before or after this podcast, depends on when it's released. Okay. So, yeah, if you have any questions about keepers, about draft picks, we will endeavor to answer them as quickly as possible. And if they are, like, on a time limit, put the time limit there so we either meet it or feel guilty.
Or both.
Yeah. One or the other. Anyway, we have some great questions this week. One question related to this that I particularly love, but some others. Let me turn it over to the mailbag captain to walk us through.
That's me. The first question is from Bradley or Brad. It's very confusing because this person signs his email address. His email's Bradley, but the email address is Brad. I think we referred to him as both. I apologize. Let us know what you want to be called.
It will make us feel guilty.
Oh, yeah.
Put in a time limit as well.
In the past, we had advised him to play Corey Seager in a corner outfield or talked about how we did that. And it's something he hadn't thought about. And he was wondering about the penalty for playing someone out of position in score sheet. He looked through the old score sheet talk post but hadn't found an answer. But I think we have one for him.
Oh, man. I'm going to blow your mind with something right here. The answer is on Scoresheet's website, you guys.
What?
I know.
No.
I know.
I don't. Do you, is it the PDF draft packet? Is it in there?
Not only is the answer on Scoresheet's website, but I only had to do 2 Google searches to find it.
That can't be right. No.
I know. Yeah, so the website goes into pretty extensive detail, and I think in the question, you know, it's asking about errors. There's 2 components to defense. There's fielding range and also errors, and the explanation talks about both of them and gives you some sense of what the penalties are for playing a player out of position. So, for example, an average shortstop playing in the outfield has a range of 2.07, just to pick an example here. And I think he'll also make slightly more errors in the outfield as a result of being out of position. I think the other thing that talks about is how errors and range are mostly separate until you put a player out of position, and then they're sort of combined. It's not exactly clear in the way that it's phrased. I think some of it may be just that it's combined for the sake of their examples. Do you guys want me to read through any of that? I don't think the listeners need me to read the website for them. We'll include a link to the website in the post on Baseball Prospectus so you can check it out yourself.
Yeah, so one of the things that I think I didn't really know until I was prompted by this is that the out-of-position range includes both errors and decreased range in the range factor. So it adds an error penalty, like, inherent to it. And I will say, if you go into the Score Sheet Talk forum, you can search for it, but it's actually in the files of the Score Sheet Talk group. You can find the out-of-position tool, which I can say fervent listener, but potential listener, Garth Hewitt, and a person who can actually answer this question to a much greater extent than we can, put together. And it will, if you type in your player's range, it will give you the out-of-position penalty. But I would say, in general, shortstops can play outfield, and everything else makes you feel a little woozy.
And anyone can play first base.
Yeah.
Maybe. There was what, like a 5-year stretch where we didn't have a first baseman play first base in any of our teams, I think.
Yeah, which I think we're setting that up in our one of our current leagues that we're drafting in now. We have Justin Turner going across the diamond. I actually like it. Whatever penalty you get in terms of offense, I feel like the added flexibility, if you, in case of injury, just makes up for it completely. It just gives you extra depth, unless you play like a shortstop there. Which is another reason why we don't tend to end up with, the Paul Goldschmidts of the world.
Yeah.
For them that were not at the game.
It's true. All right, shall we move on?
Yeah, sure.
The next question comes from Grant, and I do believe this was the only email that Grant sent us this week. I don't think I'm wrong about that, but I don't know.
The problem is 4 people get that joke.
Right? it's foreshadowing. I think Ian brought it up before, and he's gonna. Yeah.
Okay.
He's setting up another joke. But, okay. Just letting the listener know, by the way. Think of that as like subtitles.
So Grant's email is asking what we think about Carlos Rodon. The trade that he has on the table appears to be Carlos Carrasco and Groom. He can maybe get another prospect or pick out of the deal. His rotation is Scherzer, Kluber, Quintana, and Hill, and he has youth in the lineup.
All right.
The deal would also include Rafael Devers. Devers.
Rafael Devers, or Devers, I guess, if you're actually pronouncing it correctly, but I've heard Devers.
Why before. Start now?
So, yeah. By the way, I think it's also pronounced Jason Grom.
No.
Inexplicably.
No.
But I believe that to be true.
Well, I'm taking a firm stance there. How could it be Grom? No. Like Buddy.
Right. Yeah, that's a solid reference that a lot of people will pick up on. I like that. Definitely, the first thing I think of when I think of a Grom is definitely Buddy Grom.
I don't know what else you could go with that.
Ben, I thought so. You had a response already, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote an email. Carlos Carrasco was the 66th overall pick in the mock draft. Let's see. Rodon was 126. Those are just sort of like benchmarks that I think help represent my position, which is that I think giving up Carrasco is a mistake in this case. I don't think, even if you're expecting Rodon to blossom and grow into a better pitcher, or you think that Don Cooper's going to work some magic, I know I heard a thing about Rodon and his changeup, I think it was. Anyway, even if you're projecting future growth, I don't think he's likely enough to grow enough to close that gap. And even if he does, you already know that Carrasco's pretty darn good right now, and it seemed to me like it's worth it to hold on to Carrasco, but I don't know anything about the other guys, so I could be totally wrong.
I guess it's an interesting question. I don't think it's a guarantee lock either way. Oh, and by the way, I think he actually pronounced it Carlos Rodon, so nobody pronounces their name correctly in this trade.
Carlos Rodon?
I think he's from North Carolina, so I think he does not pronounce words correctly.
Is he from there, or did he just go to school there?
I believe, I don't know his background, actually. Is he from, this is the part where you all can Google it.
Yeah.
Don't make me Google it.
One more
from a Godzilla movie, right? Like Godzilla versus Rodon.
Solid, okay.
Rafael Devers is 142 in the mock draft, so a little bit after Rodon.
Yeah. So I think, I think you're reasonably right to be high on Rodon and Devers. I think Rodon is probably most likely to be a frustrating mid-rotation starter for a very long time, which is kind of the path of least resistance, like basically the guy he is. I do see the upside. I think Carlos Carrasco is a better player by a good amount. I think Carrasco is underrated, and I think you could say he gets injured every year, but it seems like those injuries tend to be like traumatic. I don't love his delivery, but you know, I don't think I know any better than most people like which healthy pitcher is otherwise likely to get hurt. So yeah, that said, I think giving up Carlos Carrasco is a little bit too much for me. If I was a little bit higher on Rafael Devers, I think I'd be willing to do it. So, you know, your choice. I think Devers is likely to be a good player, but I don't believe it's a lock at all. And I think he's also somewhat likely to end up on the other side of the diamond, which will, especially if he stays a Red Sox. Although, he's on Dave Dombrowski's team, so the chances that he remains a Red Sox is almost infinitesimal. But if he ends up a first baseman, he's a lot less interesting. And if he ends up a third baseman, I think he will be a good one. I think there's a chance he's a great one. I think I'd rather have Carrasco. And Jason Groom is nice to have.
I wasn't wrong. Yes.
I think it's an interesting kind of trade because Groom's trying to compete this year, but also thinking about his future. He's got a strong rotation, but he doesn't want to give up a starting pitcher in the trade. I almost wonder if it's in some sense like too conservative an idea to be trading like this sort of trade, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe finding a trade that picks a little bit more of a direction, like either just straight trading one of the pitchers for something else, or I don't know. It just seems to, like, this might be trying to balance too much, and then you're gaining maybe a little bit at the margin.
Yeah, I mean, it's high floor players who still have a good ceiling, which, you know, tend to be the kinds of players that we do really like. But I actually think Carlos Carrasco is one of them. So I think it's kind of, it might just sort of be the particular players in this instance. I think the reasoning is correct, and I think if you're higher on Devers than I am, I don't think it's a sure thing either way. I would probably not do it.
Cool. The last question comes from Chris.
Oh, are we sure?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, one of us is the mailbag captain. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Chris asks us about prep work, that he loves our draft episodes and uses it as a gun when he's filling out his drafts. So how do we prep for our drafts?
I have bad news for you. Usually I don't go to grad school. and then I have time and then do a lot of research. So in lieu of that this year, probably the fundamentals, and I think we'll all agree on this, is having a some sort of system as a backstop, Pacoda or something else. I actually think the particulars of which system you use probably matter a little less than you might think, but just having a way to line players up in order so that, you know, some people enjoy drafting from their guts, although probably a lot less than, you know, a decade ago. But I certainly wouldn't recommend that. But so that said, you have a baseline draft list, and then there are a few things you have to do with it. You have to be able to sort players by position. I usually either do this or have Ben do it, which is join it to the positional ratings. So you can either do that automatically, or if you have some spreadsheet, whiz, capabilities, or it might be a little bit of plug and play, but just to find the multi-position players and then to have every position set up.
You're talking about the score sheet defensive ratings, right?
Yeah, yeah, and qualifications, and just being sure also not to miss players who are going to qualify in the first week or early on. Sometimes you have to just add those in mentally. We can devote one of these to just a defensive positioning rant, right?
The draft. I keep hoping you'll make it, but
it'll happen.
Yeah, we're a little too close to giving useful information these first days, and then this will just evolve. So you want to make sure that defense is respected. You also have to consider ballpark factors. So very often, if you're using something that isn't SSM, such as a competing brand, or you want to look at projected warp or war, you then have to kind of add the park factors back in before you sort. And then you probably want to check playing time and depth charts. I would suggest doing that through Baseball Prospectus or Fangraphs if you don't have like your own comprehensive knowledge of every team's depth chart. Or you could be a giant weirdo, and that's exciting. RosterResource.com is another good resource. And finally, like the big one is obviously adjusting for age, because at least with your top few picks, you want to start drafting keepers. And then, obviously, for rookies as well, you want to understand age. So generally, what I like to do, it's kind of a hack, but I don't love, like I was saying last week, I don't love drafting off prospect rankings. I think they are great. I think prospect raters know more than I do about prospects. I also think they are not necessarily useful for score sheet, which is a game where you are, using stat lines and abstractions of players. Even though it's more realistic, it's not realistic. So you want to have a fundament in the stats. So I tend to compare age relative to level a lot, especially in the higher levels. But I just like seeing players track well against each other. So look at player projections by age and compare that way. How did they rank compared to similar players of the same age? And also do some of the manipulations that I talked about last time. Catchers and middle infielders a little higher, pitchers probably a lot lower. I think you want to look for like 75th percentile. You want players who are likely to do, that if they do well, they will be a very good player. I think that's the sweet spot. I wouldn't be as excited about like a 5% chance at stardom. And an average player doesn't do much to push your, below average player doesn't do much to push your core keepers forward. I think an average player actually does more than you might think. Those are the major manipulations I do. I don't know. I will open this up to you guys too.
I don't think I have too much to add that you didn't already cover. That was pretty thorough. I think if I were doing it by myself, and I think probably for most folks, you can start out with trying to find a projection that already incorporates projected playing time, so you don't have to cross-reference depth charts too much. And then be careful about which metrics you use. Like you said, some of them are park-adjusted, and we don't really want park-adjusted metrics. If you want some kind of quick and dirty, you can just use innings pitched and ERA for pitchers and plate appearances on base percentage and slugging for hitters. That'll get you most of the way there. You can sort of come up with naive runs created metrics that way, or runs prevented. And I think that's enough to get you a list. And I think from there, one of the things that we've talked about, I guess, is having the system as a backdrop, but not necessarily adhering to it. 100% of the time, it's fun to have guys that you like and reasons for liking them or whatever. And I think everybody does that. That's part of what makes it fun. So don't just draft like a robot. Draft guys that you want to own so that you have fun following your team and you enjoy playing. And it's not just like, well, this is what the computer told me to do kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Jared, do you have anything?
Well, I guess I was going to ask, this is probably fall somewhere between draft prep and actual draft, and may not have any merit at all, but looking at the other owners in your league and how they draft and what their holes are in terms of do you think it's worthwhile at all to be thinking about, all right, this player may fall another round, especially if you're on the on the corners during the draft, you know, all right, well, okay, this guy doesn't need any more third baseman, so I can wait on this guy, or this guy doesn't draft anyone who's younger than 24, so I can wait, or something like that. Is it worth that, either physically or have a mental idea of who the other owners are and what they might be drafting, so that during the draft that can help inform your picks?
I tend not to do that, except in two circumstances. One is just I'm in a sandwich where, like, I have the second or third to last pick, and I'm playing against two other owners, or less, or fewer. Mainly because I can only carry around so much information in my head. The other, probably, like, you have a sense of how prospect-laden your league is. And I'll tend to change my evaluation of who to pick up based on, like, how many people pick up prospects. But I don't know. I can't really keep track of all that, especially during a draft, even when I have time. And I feel like there are enough surprises, like, some people will take that second, third baseman right before you have one. But I feel like drafting versus your opponents is kind of really tricky to do in anything but the abstract.
Yeah,
I think
I agree with all that. I think in addition to prospects, your league might draft relievers a little differently than typical leagues. I've been in some leagues that had a few owners that really wanted to have elite relievers and would sort of overdraft them. But I think most of the rest of the positions tend to shake out evenly enough that you're not gonna gain too much of an advantage, especially relative to the amount of time you could invest into learning other things about who the players are, like figuring out other ways to spend your time and building, I guess, a more comprehensive prep tool on the whole, rather than spending that time trying mm-hmm. to figure out what your opponents do. I think we're sort of assuming that time is one of your scarce resources, and I think there are probably you hit diminishing returns on spending time researching your co-owners more quickly than you hit diminishing returns researching other players, or trying to make the prep tool that you're building, the lists with your rankings, incorporate new information or something like that, where it can sort of help you better understand the entire population of players. You know, if you're pulling in another prospect ranking list, or you're integrating another depth chart, projected playing time type of resource, I think I've seen some pretty compelling research that the best projection is the average of all of the projections. So if I had extra time to burn when I was building my prep list, I would be more likely to try to pull in more separate projection systems and combine them together than I would be to try to look through draft history and figure out what my opponents were likely to do.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, definitely. I do have actually one other thing that I tend to do for prep, although it might be harder this year, but I will recommend this, and this is, I would put this in the not time saving category, but it's actually a little timely, because this Friday is our first spring training game, and I like, and I recommend watching a few spring training games, if you have access to MLB TV. Here are some things you will not get from spring training. You will not get, let's say,
You will not know who is good from a spring training game. You're not watching for talent. You are watching kind of the metagame. There are a few things that I think are useful from spring training, and very little of it has to do with the gameplay. A lot more of it has to do with you through interviews or even through the broadcasters who talk with the team officials regularly. You kind of get a better sense of who is good and who the team likes and who they don't. And I feel like that's valuable information because you may not win on, having the best player, but a player with 400 at-bats instead of 300, or a player who's going to start April with a job. You know, that's where you can gain a little bit of an edge. And if you had to focus, I actually think the first week or two of spring training is good. I don't know how many of you are spring training watchers, but the first week or two is actually usually the pitchers go about one inning each, 1 to 2 innings, to be followed by creative relievers. You'll get a lot of the 40-man rosters. So if you want to see top prospects, especially in the upper levels, this is the week to do it. Towards the end of spring training is when players start getting extended, battles start getting a little bit clearer, and you have you'll see some lower level prospects. So that's where you might get to see that A-ball pitcher make a brief debut. I don't think you'll learn a lot from that, other than how people talk about them, unless you're watching the other broadcast, in which case they will have never heard of any player on your team, and they'll make fun of him being number 97, and you're like, well, he's actually the top prospect on the team. And you'll learn very quickly that announcers, by and large, never do prep work. And know nothing.
Prep work is overrated, Ian. I've been telling you that.
So, but I think the first week is actually, and also it's fun. It's baseball. It's fun. If it seems like a chore to you, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast or you're producing it.
Got him.
Otherwise, I think you could probably just... It's a good time to, like, set Google alerts to read about team relationships. Check Google News before you draft any player. Just to see, again, like positional battles. I do think you don't want to overestimate that. I do think talent wins out pretty soon, but for really marginal players like relievers, being down for a month is significant because you are only going to have them for five. That's about all.
Cool.
Anything else here?
Nope.
I think we covered the draft prep.
So that's every question?
No,
go ahead. Saying hopefully now.
Now everybody's
going to... You know everything.
Yeah, everybody's going to be able to prep for their drafts. Feel super prepared.
Yeah. This year we're teaching a man to fish, I think. It's a bold new approach for us that involves less work on our parts. So, thank you for bearing with us. We should be back to our standard service by 2018.
I think you're going to find that you like it this way better, Ian.
Oh, I don't know that he's going to find it.
Not the lack of preparation part, but the teaching to fish part.
Yeah, I have my doubts. So, Jared, are there any other questions?
I don't believe so.
I don't want to say you're derelict in your duty, but do you want to, like, really reach into that old mailbag and just see if there's anything on the bottom?
I mean, I could check my spam folder, maybe. Okay. It ended up in there. The best part of the email that we're talking about that you guys don't get because you didn't receive the email, but I think your response to it, Ben.
Yeah.
So maybe it's time to introduce it, just because otherwise we're talking around it for 15 minutes, which is actually kind of funny in its own way, right?
No, it's not funny.
It's not funny. It's really funny if you, like, say, oh, we've got this really funny joke that someone sent us that we don't ever explain or introduce in any way.
It's the first time of comedy.
Yeah. The Waiting for Godot mediocre fantasy baseball podcast. Alright, now that we've murdered any momentum that this joke possibly has to live, go for it.
I don't even know, like, I don't want to read the whole, I don't know how to.
I'll read.
Yeah.
This comes from Grant, who is very funny. I feel like it's better if you read it, but maybe you'll just start laughing. Hey guys, I could really use some help on this. I've got a team that is almost contended a bunch, never quite can break through. I got real close in 1996, but then some really weird stuff happened. That's a good line. Give me a once-over. He has a prospect-laden rotation and some former All-Stars. So he has Dylan Bundy on his team, Chris Tillman, Kevin Gossman is actually a pretty good pick. It gets a little dicey towards the back end of the rotation. Wade Miley and Ubaldo Jimenez. Lineup I actually like. So, you know, a lot of power, I think. So Adam Jones in center. Chris Davis, Mark Trumbo, Jonathan Scope, Wellington Castillo, J.J. Hardy, and Manny Machado, actually. A great, you know, really great pick. And Hyunsoo Kim in the corner, I guess, for a little bit of on base. What do you think of this team? Seems score sheet ready or not?
I mean, in my opinion, I think this is a team that should win you. I say on the order of 90 games. I'm assuming that you probably have an amazing bullpen to go with this. Just guessing by how well you've drafted the rest of your team, so yeah. I would say 90 league title is probably what you're looking for. I don't know if I would do anything to this team. I would leave it alone.
Would you trade any prospects?
Oh, I mean, if this team had prospects, which I'm pretty sure it doesn't, based on his description, I would get rid of them immediately. It doesn't really matter what you get back for them, to be honest.
So I thought we could play a fun game with this. Ben, how many names did you read before you realized that this email was a joke?
Seven names.
So you got through the rotation and you got to Seth Smith, and it's Seth Smith?
So I didn't realize the Orioles had signed Seth Smith, or traded for him, or whatever they did. And, like, we've seen plenty of rotations that have a bunch of guys that are similar, and honestly, I thought that, like I didn't remember that Wade Miley was on the Orioles. I remember that, like, they had signed Ubaldo Jimenez, and that was, like, funny, but I thought, like, there's no way he's still on the Orioles. And, like, I knew Bundy and Tillman and Gossman were, and I knew Adam Jones was, but it wasn't until I got to Machado, and then I was like, oh. And the other thing that you didn't mention, that the email title is Contender or Pretender, which I thought was funny. He did a good job with that. The wording of the, like, some really weird stuff happened in the sim.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the best part, like you said.
Yeah, well, the Orioles need some luck balancing. They've been a little over. I took this seriously for a second, and I want to take a little time and play an actual game. Soft 13 League. So we have a roster here. We can go. We can go player by player. How many keepers do the Orioles have? Let's say a 15 team AL league.
Six.
What would we do with this roster?
Six, maybe.
In a soft.
Yeah, soft 13.
Ben, I'm surprised you don't say one in a soft.
It's close. I guess it depends on what you think the rest of the league is going to do. But yeah, I can see going one.
I mean, it's a relatively deep league because it's going to be a 15-team league, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
So, like...
All right, so Manny Machado we got.
Yeah. I could see keeping all three of the pitchers, just because one of them is probably going to be decent, but you don't really know which one, so...
Yeah.
I like to say all three of the pitchers as a given two rusher.
Sorry.
You think Dan Duquette ever walks around going, oh, you should keep all three of the pitchers. Like, oh, Dan. Five pitchers on the team. He's like, he fires the database girl.
Database woman.
Woman. It's really tough. Yeah. Who is probably the most talented person in the organization. As in, she was the one who said, hey, I think we should have a database. So,
low bar, but yeah.
Clearly a superior talent on that organization. Yeah, okay. So, we're going to keep Manny Machado. We'll keep Chris Davis, number two, right? Mm-hmm. Number three, Kevin Gausman, I guess? Sure.
I think so.
All right. Number four. I guess we're... Number four is going to be Jonathan Scope, I'm going to say.
Interesting.
I think he... You know, that's what we were talking about, where you want to do age relative to level. I don't think he'll get a lot better, but I think as a middle infielder with some power... He lines up in a way that's pretty good score sheet wise. The Royals actually have a pretty score sheet based team. You know, power first, not very fast. really good for sim leagues. Set all the running to N. We're all good. I guess Scope would be four, right? Chris Tilden five.
Yeah, unless you're worried about injury stuff, but yeah.
Yes, I sure am. In that he is, currently.
Yeah, he's, I mean, it doesn't sound super, I don't know.
Doesn't sound super serious to have a slightly rich plasma injection in your shoulder?
No, I get that all the time.
Yeah. No, he's not ready for opening day?
I mean, what's opening day, but...
Okay, so he's the fifth best player in your team. So... number six,
Zach Britton.
Yeah, we'll keep Zach Britton. That's probably good. I would keep Zach Britton ahead of Chris Tillman.
Zach Britton, if you didn't see, has an oblique problem.
Okay with that.
Okay.
Tillman and Bundy were both drafted in the mock, for whatever that's worth. I'm not sure that they were picks that got a ton of praise, but they were taken.
Yeah. it's fine. So we're up to seven.
I think that's it.
Yeah. Adam Jones sure has the sense of being a good player, but well, Wellington Castillo, I think, is actually really good for score sheet because defense doesn't count. And the Orioles.
Trumbo is also drafted in the mock. A little bit earlier than...
I was going to say, guys, you got to keep him. I don't understand. This is the debate.
All right, so we have Wellington Castillo with Mark Trumbo. So you're gonna go with that Buffalo defense that the Orioles were so known for.
Manny Machado can cover half the infield.
That's true. Well, he's going to have shortstop eligibility, which is great news because we're not keeping J.J. Hardy, for God's sake.
Yeah, I guess.
We'll find a third baseman on the market. It's a struggle. I might rebuild with that team.
Yeah.
Can you get to 13? Did you Ken? Yeah. Would you do Brad Brack?
You gotta go three relievers. Givens? You gotta go three plus relievers.
Yeah.
To get to 13.
A lot of relievers. I still believe Wade Miley could be perfectly decent. Although he hasn't shown that in a while. You could probably get to 13, especially in a 15-team league. But, good lord. You keep one minor leaguer.
That's all the minor leaguers you need.
Yeah.
There's a chance you need more than one.
Yeah. I wouldn't keep Cody Sedlock.
No?
No, I don't think in an AL only. Maybe. That's pretty marginal, keeper.
You guys, that's as close as I get to being funny, and you totally missed it.
What was the joke?
It's fine. It's gone. You can listen to it on the podcast.
It's better when you explain it.
I said there's a chance you need more than one prospect.
Okay.
Wait, isn't the Orioles one prospect named Chance?
Yes.
Yeah. But, yeah.
All right, whatever.
Listeners, please write it and let us know.
Maybe if you phrase it, there's a chance you only need one. I think that works a little better.
Whatever. Your team sucks. Let's move on.
Well, so what do you do with this team?
Win.
Win. Okay, but so you have nine keepers. Do you start trading out?
Go now.
Yeah. Well, I would want to figure out how many other teams would be willing to go now.
Okay, go one.
That seems like a fun exercise. If any team has less.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
It might be my White Sox. but like, which AL team should go nil? Because obviously, if you're in a league, one team optimally should go nil, right? If we had perfect knowledge.
Perfect information. Yep.
Yeah. Which team would that be? The Oakland A's?
The Angels? I guess not.
Angels probably.
I think I'd want to keep one player on the Angels.
You're going to want to keep one player on the Orioles then, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be.
Unless you have, like, the first overall pick, I guess.
Sure.
Yeah. Do the Orioles have the worst second player in baseball? Or in the AL? It might be. This is a fun game.
It might be the A's. I mean, if you were the A's, who's your number one protect?
Jesus.
Jesus is not on the A's.
No, and he'd only get them to about 79 wins. I think my number one protect on the A's is Marcus Semien, I believe.
That's not a great number one.
I believe that's true if we checked the mock draft, too.
Yeah, I'm looking at their depth chart. I don't see anybody better. So I think the A's go nil. I think that's
That's not an ideal team. By the way, are we still pretending that Billy Beane is really good at general managing? How does that work?
That's a good question. I don't know.
When was the last time you liked a move that the Oakland A's made? It feels like it's been 5 years.
So, okay, what do you think happened then? Do you think, was he ever good? Because I think he put together some good teams out of luck. Was he good for a little and then not good?
My guess is that he had a very good strategy, and then some business guy wrote a book about it. And then everyone had that strategy, and it was hard to adjust. Plus, he worked for an absentee owner, and was an absentee owner. And I think some of the internal politics probably took the team apart a little as well. The A's were also good for a while there, more recently than you might think. Although I think they were making terrible moves left and right, even as they were good. But good lord, there's nothing left on that team.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's a team where we're going to want to, like, you would probably want to actively change the channel. That's the team I'd be least likely to watch on MLB TV this year. That or the Padres, who I do feel like a name of Padre could be a really good trivia question.
Wow. I only knew one.
Yeah. It's a rough go.
Wow.
It's a rough go. Yeah, name a Padre starting pitcher is a real trait.
I got one for you. Julie Chassin.
That's a solid pull. I did not know that you would know that Julie Chassin would
I didn't. I pulled up their depth chart, but but I think it's funny to remind you of Julie Chassin.
Yeah, so the Padres rotation, I'll give listeners another 30 seconds to kind of come up with it while I vamp. I do like that they pulled it out of nothing, that their number one starter for most of the offseason was Luis Perdomo. And they looked at that and went, oh, that can't be good. And I can't say they replaced them with, like, better players, but they certainly replaced them with players who I'd heard of before.
Do you guys know that Clayton Richard went to Michigan?
No.
I did not know Clayton Richard went to Michigan.
Yeah.
So that's Zach Putnam went to Michigan. That I do know. He was the star of the Wolverines team.
Does he play on the Padres?
No. That's just another fact that I know about baseball players.
Well, I thought we were talking about the Padres.
Did Chris Getz go to Michigan?
Find out more on our other podcast, People Who Went to Michigan.
Yeah. Well, college baseball's coming. I want to watch college baseball this weekend, but the first weekend for college baseball is never good because it's always, like, homecoming teams.
Oh, man. So oh, man. You're never going to guess who went to Michigan. Rich Hill.
Nice.
Oh, I did know that. So that's what it takes. So, Ben, I think that means you got a few years to put it all together.
Wow.
So anyway, the Padres rotation, the number one starter, opening day starter, is going to be Jared Weaver. Who throws 84. I don't think they've given him the opening day start yet, but that's really exciting. Number two starter is Julius Chassin. Number three starter is probably going to be Christian Friedrich, the returning ace of the team. Number four will be the aforementioned Clayton Richard. And then there's going to be like a little battle for number five. I think the most likely candidate is Jared Cosart, unless he gets hurt, in which case Trevor Cahill might get into the rotation.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, well, if you like blasts from the past that were not very good in the first place, I've got a great team for you to follow. The Padres have this interesting situation where they should probably go to their really good bullpen in, like, the third inning of every game. But, you know, the future of that team doesn't particularly matter much. I'm also really excited to see if they will keep, like, all four of their Rule 5 prospects. If you're going to be a bad team, I do really enjoy, like, insanely put together bad teams.
Yeah.
And the average bad team.
I can respect that.
Yeah. Anything else baseball-wise? I'm excited to watch a baseball game coming up this week on Friday. It's the first MLB TV day. I do recommend other people watching along with me. It's a good time. We've got the World Baseball Classic coming up. I'm sure we'll hit that coverage hard.
That's still a thing?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, man. I like the World Baseball Classic.
I thought that fad would be over by now.
Yeah, you know what else did? Most of the players who have asked not to go.
Makes sense.
I just feel like any player who begs out of the World Baseball Classic should not be allowed to play in a spring training game. I'm not a crackpot. While the World Baseball Classic is going on. Right? If you're too hurt to show up at the World Baseball Classic, you're too hurt to play in a game.
Was it spring training, like, fundamentally different than the World Baseball Classic?
Well, yeah, but I also think we should encourage participation. And, you know, it kind of bugs me that a lot of players are like, nah, I don't really want to. Because, you know, making things optional doesn't seem like a great way to ever build this to the point of the World Cup. Or even, you know, a cup. And I feel like this will be the last World Baseball Classic unless something exciting happens. And that's kind of a bummer. You weren't there watching some quality honkball action as the Netherlands team came back to knock off, was it DR in the game we saw, Jared?
That's not something I would remember, the team.
Yeah, Puerto Rico. Yeah, but I do remember Netherlands winning, and the 10 people in the stands at Dolphin Stadium, or Pro Player Park, or whatever you want to call it, was... they were really excited for their honkballers. And you can't capture that kind of magic, except at maybe a Little League game. A similar amount of people would get really excited. But, no, it was great. Rick Vandenhoek was starting.
Yeah.
And he was pitching. The catcher was Kenley Jansen.
Yes.
Which... Oh, God, what a team. yeah, now they have all... now they have, like, every shortstop in baseball. Just, like, littering other positions. So things have really started looking up for the Netherlands. But back then, they were young, scrappy, and hungry. Yeah, I have World Baseball Classic fever. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully I can watch enough games to make it worth my while. But I hope everyone else gets into it, too.
It's
an insane thing that happens in March. Who doesn't like insane things in March? One could say madness. But that would probably be copyrighted. Ben, what's the best thing you saw this week?
The best thing I saw this week was... the Women's Club Player of the Year, Cammy Groom, coming out to flywheel practice.
I believe you mean Groom.
It's a callback.
I'm going to let that slide.
Listen to the podcast later and get that joke.
No, I remember exactly what you're talking about.
Go ahead.
Yeah, she plays for Boston's club team and is coming off of back-to-back club national championships and was in town checking out the law school, and she and I had talked a little bit at nationals last year, and she reached out and wanted to come out to practice, and it was awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So mine is also really light too, but I watched a television show that I didn't realize I had missed as much as I did. I saw the first two episodes of The Good Fight, which is...
Oh man.
Coming soon to a weird opening intro to this podcast near you. It was really nostalgic. And I forgot how much I missed it because I was hating The Good Wife by the end of it. But it turns out I just hated The Good Wife, the character. Which was a real bummer. And they took away every character I didn't like and replaced it with most of the great characters who I enjoyed. I do recommend watching The Good Wife if you have not started. That's a really solid show. But if you want to start from a place where you don't feel like you have to watch 7 seasons, I do recommend this. It's a really interesting time for the show. One of The Good Wife's strengths has always been kind of responding to current events really quickly. And I feel like there is a very interesting set of current events, no matter what side you are on, such as good or evil. But... but I think, it takes a really even-handed look at events, and it doesn't, they are very good about not confirming what liberals think, let's say, as you might think. that they enjoy challenging that position a lot. And I think it's also they're really good at world building. I felt like two episodes in, they had brought a lot of characters back, and also had some very new, new interesting characters and new directions that the show could go. But I would say it was great to see David Lee again.
Oh, man.
It was great to see Judge Dennis O'Hare again. Even better than that, the best thing I saw this week was seeing Sarah Steele as Marissa Gold.
Oh, man. You love her so much.
Which is just, yeah, I know. Just a, well, and she's going to be the Kalinda of the show.
Ooh.
Which is just the best decision.
Yeah.
And Christine Baranski Baranskiing all over everything. Highly recommended.
Is Chum Hum back?
No. Oh, that will be really exciting. The return of Chum Hum. For any Good Wife fan that's nodding, anyone else, Chum Hum is the word that everyone at The Good Wife uses because they can't say the word Google. So if you want to chum hum something later, let me know.
So is it worth paying for the CBS All Access or whatever weird thing it is?
Well, I mean, different people have different methods with which to see it.
I see.
I obviously got a bunch of screeners.
Sure.
We'll continue to get some screeners throughout the season.
Sure.
But I would, if you're opposed to, let's say, getting screeners, which is obviously how I'm watching it, I would recommend it, yeah. Or at least at the end of the season, doing a marathon for a day.
That sounds good.
Yeah, highly recommend it. Alright, Jared?
Yeah.
What you saw this week?
I don't really have much. I'll just say that I finally got through all the Best Picture nominees, since this will be going up near... Well, just before the Oscars. I'm sure I'll have thoughts about the Oscars.
Very true. Okay, well, we waited long enough with distracting from baseball. So what is your best picture of the year? From the nominees, right?
Good. Yeah. So, I'll be honest, I found this year to be incredibly blah. I don't hate any of the movies, which is... rare for me. Usually I find one just unwatchable. But I also don't really love any of them that much. I know I am in the minority there, but I think they're all... I don't know. I had trouble with all of them. I guess if I had to pick one, I'd probably go Hell or High Water or Hidden Figures.
The two movies I least want to watch. That sounds right.
Yep. This is definitely an Ian year for movies. I'm pretty sure Moonlight is going to be big for you.
Yeah, I have not seen Moonlight, and I have not seen Manchester by the Sea, and I believe I would love both of those movies quite a lot.
Yeah.
But I will still rep for La La Land, which is a movie that loves being a movie.
I wanted to love La La Land. I really did. I don't
understand how you wouldn't vote La La Land just on the Flock of Seagulls scene alone.
Oh, well, that was the best scene in the movie. I think I emailed you. Like, that was my favorite scene, hands down. If the rest of the movie was like that, it would have been the best movie I ever saw. Unfortunately, it was not.
Jared also likes Crazy Stupid Love more than any of the Oscar nominations.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, come on. Yes, there's no question about that. I'll fight anyone who argues there. Please.
So, we have a lot to look forward to. I just hope somewhere listening is some like UFC fighter who just also really into like La La Land and wants to like, I'll take you up on that.
Are you implying that the only person that could beat me up is a UFC fighter?
Yeah.
Okay.
That checks out.
Yeah.
So this is an episode. All right. Anything else, guys?
No.
Okay. Thanks again. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.